Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, jau wivi vakat bang, half a day, chai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison, Kilitary Industrial Corporation, in the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster-bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-borne in the NSA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat, this is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And, you know, since we're not with the network anymore, you know, things are kind of loose around here. Like, when we say we'll be live 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Sundays, well, 5, 5.10, 5.30, we're hippies in Northern California. Didn't you see the sign in Haight-Ashbury? You say you want a revolution? Come to the World Vegan Summit and Expo. So, you know, about 5 o'clock, we should say. We don't, you know, there was the discipline of the network, that corporate world, and you know, who wants to be ruled by that, right? So when we say 5 o'clock Sundays live show, about 5, you know what I mean? Like maybe at 5 o'clock, just start untangling your earbuds. You know, just work on that for a little while. Before you know it, the show will be on before you can put your earbuds in, right? So, is it, I don't know, what, is it built into the fabric of earbuds that they seek out every other wire? You know, from the beard trimmer wire to the chargers to the microphone wire. You know, they just wrap themselves around. So was that the reason we're a little late on the air? I don't know, it's as good a reason as any. The technical things that go on in the world, you know, so I don't think I will be able to begin the program as I had intended, I would say, maybe I can get this done in the second hour. I wanted to present a special invitation now it's this coming week's World Vegan Summit and Expo. Is that unbelievable? It's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday? Whew. Wow, we better get it together. Theoretically, I am an organizer. In reality, I am a disorganizer. I create chaos. And then we have 4 or 5 wonderful people who are, you know, try to clean up after me the chaos that's being created. And so we wish to thank Ben Brayman, who is also engineering this program, and Julie Meskel, Julie Curran Meskel, and Anuj Shah, and Gracie Chan, who are all working really hard on this. So remember, if everything goes great, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, World Vegan Summit and Expo, UC Berkeley, register now at worldvegansummit.com. Everything goes great there. Remember who the organizer is. Remember who gets credit. And, you know, if anything goes wrong, you know, things didn't quite happen the way you expected, or, you know, whatever, just remember those 4 people I mentioned just now, 4 or 5 people. They're the ones to blame. Okay? Got it? Okay. I suppose that. But really, it's going to be spectacular. Everybody's excited about it. People are coming from all over the world. And registrations are pouring in because people wait until the last minute for everything, and it is the last minute, and you wouldn't want something strange to happen, like we sell it out and you can't be there, because you do want to be there. This is a once-in-a-lifetime event. In fact, the most important event you will ever attend, just based on the fact that we're the ones who are going to solve climate change and have the solution for it. And we're the ones who are going to talk about perhaps preventing your children from being on the path to heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes. You know, so, we have all the answers and amazing speakers. Presentations Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the expo starts 10 o'clock Friday morning. The expo is free to the public. That is at Lower Sproul Plaza on UC Berkeley, campus of UC Berkeley. That's the expo, free to the public, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Come out, say hi to the wonderful vendors who will be there, who are supporting our effort, helping us to raise the money to pay for putting something together like this, where we actually, you know, kind of get together as people. You know, it's not just some, you know, everybody doing a Skype conference call or a webinar or something. It's not that we're, you know, just separated by our screens, everybody, you know, isolated. This is like, hey, let's get together. You know, there's something in the air. The revolution's here, to quote the Thunderclap Newman song. And you say you want a revolution. This is the revolution. There is no revolution without a vegan revolution, because vegan revolution actually accomplishes all the goals of any progressive movement, including no oppression of anyone, which is the main part of it. You know, we're in it for the animals here. They don't deserve anything that they get. They're born into a death penalty. You know, look at that. Just born into the death penalty. Born on death row. Where's the justice there? No crime, totally harmless, but they are born to die, born to suffer, born to be used, and we're against it. So that makes us for life. Can you believe that? Something that's actually for life in our society, in our culture of death. Death everywhere. You know, death on your terror vision set. Death at the Republican convention. More death on your plate, actually. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, when you come right down to it. You know, death culture, culture of violence. And yes, Ben.
Jerry's calling us.
Okay, so, all right, well, so what I think we'll do this week, because we, again, did have some technical problems, it's really not that we're just a bunch of hippies in Northern California who, you know, hey, we'll get around to doing the show when we get around to doing it. Sometimes there are those technical problems. So, what I wanted to discuss at the beginning of the show, I will save for later, because I arranged to have Professors Gary Francione and Anna Charlton on the program earlier today, meaning 5:30, which is probably a little after that now. And then we have Professor Gary Steiner, who attended Berkeley, the University of California at Berkeley. So he's coming back to his alma mater, and he'll be on the program in just a little bit. And then hopefully next hour I will get to my special invitation to this week's World Vegan Summit and Expo to people who have recently become ex-vegans by endorsing animal meat grown with the blood of unborn baby cows. Sounds like we're going to do a horror movie review next hour, aren't we? Well, the horror is that it's reality. And we will discuss those strange developments in the strange world when we get to them. You know, we're hippies. If we get to them, if we feel like, you know, if we get to them. And register now, worldvegansummit.com. Don't miss out. Really, I mean, the registrations are pouring in right now. If you haven't noticed, it is the last minute. I've noticed it because, you know, now with organizing the event, everything is due, you know. So if you can't make it to the event and you'd like to support it, you can make a tax-deductible donation at goveganradio.com, 501c3, educational, as we are on the most important issues in the universe, as we will discuss at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. So, so Ben, is Gary on the line, or what's happening? Oh, I think Ben hears me in a 7-second delay. So I'm talking to Ben in the future, and he's hearing me in the past with a delay. So, Gary, there?
You want to just bring him on then?
Yeah, let's have Gary come on, and then we'll talk to him and Anna, Professor Steiner, and then. Are we here? What's that, Ben?
Yeah, Gary there?
Gary, are you there? I'm not hearing. I don't hear Gary, but I see that it looks like he's connected, but I'm not hearing.
So.
Okay. So, not quite there yet. All right. Well, and in a sense, isn't this, you know, isn't this just, you know, it shows that, you know, you can have these technical problems and then you can't reach people and all, but we're all gonna be gathered together. Gary, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh yeah. Okay. Now I hear you. Okay. So we're joined by Professor Gary Francione, and is Professor Charlton with you there too?
She certainly is. You haven't invisibilized her. Thank you very much for invisibilizing. Yes.
Well, it's hard not to invisibilize when, you know, you're on an audio phone call, because there's nothing really visible. How could I tell unless you tell me? So how are you doing today?
We're fine. We've been working all day diligently, like little beavers. Is that a speciesist expression? We're working like little beavers on our summit presentations, and
on your damn summit presentations.
No. Yeah. Oh. Very clever.
No, I told you I could use a stronger language now that we're not on the network, right? So there.
Oh, I thought you were making a beaver allusion.
Maybe I was.
There you go. That you were saying. You were saying.
It's the double entendre,
yes,
kind of thing.
The DAM presentations.
I'm not spelling. I'm just saying. You know.
Okay. All right. But anyway, so yes, no, we've been working on the presentations, and I think we're I'm super excited about the stuff that Anna is going to be doing about food deserts. She's got a limited amount of time, and that's unfortunate because she could actually do a whole really good presentation.
Interesting conversations always arise during these conferences, so yeah. I'll be happy to have longer conversations with anyone who's interested.
Absolutely.
And talk fast. Talk fast.
I do.
She doesn't talk as fast as I do, but she talks fast.
We can get a lot more in that way. Yeah, definitely.
Indeed. But anyway, so yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it. We're both really looking forward to it. And it
seems like a lot of people are. The registrations are exploding over the last few days.
That's wonderful news. That's wonderful news.
Oh, yeah. Well, most people wait till the last minute, you know, and so you sit here, you know, worrying, like, is anybody coming? But people wait till the last minute, and, you know, the week before becomes the last minute, and everybody, you know, starts acting, so...
You'll have to get a good night's sleep tonight, Bob, because it's going to be a week before you get another one. So.
Exactly, definitely. So, yeah, there still is so much to do. The to-do list is so full, but, you know, you know, what it looks like to the world out there is something that a lot of people are really excited about. I just heard from somebody today who writes for the Huffington Post, who's in New York City, who said that she was very disappointed in attending that so-called animal rights conference. So I said, okay, well, I'll get your press passes. Come on out to this one. So she decided, you know, she's just going to jump on a plane and come out for this. She, because she was so disappointed in the animal rights conference and what she heard there, which is has nothing really to do with the animals except to, you know, profit from them. So in the second hour of the show, I know the show started actually with you coming on today, so I might have some time in the second hour to get to what I might have gotten to in the first half hour, but I did want to send a special invitation for this coming week's World Vegan Summit and Expo to people who have recently become ex-vegans by endorsing animal meat grown with the blood of unborn baby cows. I think that people drank some fetal bovine solution serum Kool-Aid, and they need rehab. So I'm making that offer. You know, come to this because something has gone really wrong just in the last few days. You know, we talked about this super meat and that it was going to be, you know, have its great debut at an animal rights conference. Real meat, that, you know, they 100% meat, they say.
And, did they serve that stuff at the AR conference?
No, well, they served it up in presentations that as the new animal rights campaign. So I thought people would laugh them out of there or protest against them, but they've all come out now with the talking points in support of this meat. You know, that, you know, the link from farm and the animal rights conference went right to the super meat website that said meat is delicious and we're not going to stop eating it anymore. So here's super meat, 100% real meat, 0% animal suffering, which is, I mean, this is so wrong in so many ways.
Well, it's dishonest, and it's dishonest, but
it is dishonest.
It's not just as I understand the process of making that stuff, you've got to take the cells from a live animal.
Yeah. So you can't call that 0% suffering right there.
Yeah, you take that you have to take the cells from a live animal. And then you have to use at least this is what I did some work on this last year, and I don't know whether the technology has changed, but the technology, when I looked at it, was you had to take cells from a live animal, and you grew the cells in a medium that involved bovine fetal serum.
The blood of unborn baby cows seems to be necessary in the process. So,
yeah, I mean, the thing is that look, even if the baby cows are not sentient, because I don't know what stage the fetus is at, so I have no idea whether the fetus is sentient. But that's really sort of beside the point. I mean, it's still participate. I mean, look, we've got to get away. Animal rights should be about getting away from exploiting animals. And it's a simple idea. I mean, it should be about getting away from exploiting animals.
Yeah. It seems here that we're using animals to avoid using animals. We're killing animals to avoid killing animals. There's something strange going on here. But so many people have drunk the Kool-Aid. Did you see that even Gary Yourofsky did a video in support of this super meat, real meat?
Yes, but look, I mean, Gary Yourofsky, who thinks that, you know, Palestinians are a subhuman form of life. Gary Yourofsky, who says that, you know, he thinks that people who wear fur should be raped and anally electrocuted or whatever. It's appalling. And I don't really care what Gary Yourofsky says, to be very frank with you.
Well, you know, but I'm arguing with people on Facebook And they're saying, well, if it's all right for Gary Yourofsky, it's all right for me. And the other thing that they say, which I find somewhat hilarious, is that, hey, don't worry about this. It's not for vegans. It's for meat eaters. So suddenly vegans are deciding the menu of meat eaters. We're deciding what they should eat, and they're going to listen to us.
Well, let me say a couple of things. First of all, when you have a social movement that doesn't care about, put aside what Gary Yourofsky says about this stuff, this fake meat or the whatever you want to call it, cultured meat. Put aside what he says about that. What about the fact that he makes comments about that are tremendously problematic when it comes to Palestinians? I mean, he makes stereotype bigoted comments about Palestinians.
Very disturbing.
He makes statements that are very upsetting about violence. So my view is anybody who's listening to him before he starts talking about cultured meat has their head where the sun does not shine. And so therefore what he says about cultured meat is, I mean, you know, yeah, that's bad too, but that's, it's bad, but it's bad too. It's bad also.
Also, yeah.
So I don't really care what Gary Yourofsky says, but the thing that is tremendously upsetting to me about this cultured meat thing is that, well, I mean, look, the bottom line is a lot of the people who go to the that event are people who, you know, if they ever, God forbid, find themselves in Jonestown, will drink cyanide if the new Jim Jones tells them to do so. They're followers. They can't think their way out of a paper bag. And they're attracted to that event is appalling. Alex Hirschhaft should,
retire.
Well, he should retire, and he should hope that there's not an afterlife, because he's going to rot in hell for putting that thing on year after year. It's outrageous. Yeah. But I think that it's a shame. I mean, it's a real shame that.
Well, I just couldn't imagine. Let's say. Hypothetically, I were going to speak at the animal rights conference, and I went there saying, okay, I have a great idea for a new campaign. It's meat. We'll promote meat. And everybody will say, oh, yes, tofu. You're right, tofu with gravy. Right? No. Real animal meat. What do you think, guys? You know, and I would think, like, I'd be laughed out of there or taken out by security, but it actually won over minds, and that's what's happening now, and it's just amazing, because it's real meat.
Of course, anyone who's only just coming up against the idea of veganism is going to be thinking, well, even the vegans say that, you know, it's so hard to give up meat.
That's what's so awful about this. Exactly, that's the point.
If it ever becomes practicable on a large scale and become sufficiently inexpensive for most people to have access to it, which is probably a long time from now, if ever, then everyone else has just got what do you expect? You can't give it up, and I have access to this, so I can't give it up either.
And it feeds into that nonsense that, eating meat is an addiction. I can't give it up, and, it's so good.
So hard.
And it's so hard. It's so hard to be a vegan.
I haven't found a good substitute, and I would be vegan if I'd found a decent milk substitute, or that cheese just calls to me from the refrigerator. My body tells me I need to eat fish. I've had people who've been vegan in the past tell me that. And my response is always, well, my body tells me I should be eating chocolate all the time. We don't have to listen to it.
Yes, I will not name the prominent animal advocate who astonished Anna and me some years ago when we were sitting in a restaurant in New York City, and she announced to us that her body told her.
She had a chat with her body.
Yes, she had a chat with her body, and she needed to eat fish. This is a well-known person whose name you and everyone else who's listening would know, and might be shocked to find out that she thinks that eating fish is consistent with being a vegan. However,
I would be shocked. Tell us who it is. Well, nobody's listening anyway, right? So nobody listens. So
I don't want to say.
Okay. All right. Well, I tried to be a gossip show for a second here. Anne, I think, you know, you're right. It's almost like saying, all right, we give up. We're defeated. Meat is too delicious.
Exactly.
We're not going to stop eating it. We're defeated. We surrender. Eat meat.
There's that comment made by Peter Singer that
the luxury of eating
meat. That he thinks, you know, people should be eating basically a plant-based diet, but he can understand if people occasionally give themselves the luxury of eating, you know, some ethically raised animal. Sustainable. I don't know what mindset is at play when someone has been a vegan and active in this on this issue for a long time, who still thinks that eating meat would be a luxury. Where does that word come out as the right word to use about eating an animal?
Well, only rich people can afford the health care that you need from eating meat. But we also get that from Fibbin Bill McKibben, the environmental leader, who himself is not vegan. He eats meat. And he says about third world countries, he said that people in third world countries should not be deprived of the pleasure of eating meat. So there's that attitude, even while he should know that animal agriculture is considered the number one cause of climate change. But he seems to be a proponent for more ranching and, you know, against all science. He's a proponent for more ranching to address climate change, and is in an association of an international livestock association. He is in that, along with HSUS, by the way, believe it or not.
Well, the two people that I think of as the two Garys on the animal issue are Gary here and Gary Steiner, who is going to be joining you, I know, have been saying that they should write a book about the stupid things that intelligent people have said and concluded because of their compulsion to eat meat. It contaminates the outlook and debate from otherwise intelligent people.
Well, actually, I ended the introduction to animal rights with that comment. I said that the desire to continue eating animal products has clouded some of the most brilliant minds in history. But look, I think there are a couple of comments here. First of all, I think that a movement that is the animal movement as it exists in terms of the large corporate welfare groups is a tremendously confused bunch of people. It's a bunch of businesses. These animal groups are all businesses, and they're all working in tandem with the exploitation industries. They've all become partners with institutional exploiters, and they attract people who really can't think very clearly. You know, it's not that they're stupid. They're not stupid, but they are people who don't think very critically. And so they don't question PETA's sexism or the fact that PETA kills 95% of the animals it takes in at its Norfolk so-called shelter. They don't question the campaigns that are put on by HSUS and Mercy for Animals and Compassion Over Killing and all of these pro-exploitation, all these pro-happy exploitation organizations. They continue to regard Peter Singer as the father of the animal rights movement, even though he explicitly rejects rights and promotes a very speciesist, welfarist view that has him talking, as Anna just mentioned, about the luxury of eating meat and promoting all sorts of animal exploitation. And so I think that, you know, they're a confused group of people. And, you know, one of the things that's happened in modern society is that people are increasingly losing their ability to think critically because they're not reading anymore. They're not challenging themselves or being challenged anymore to think critically. People have opinions, they express them. And if you say, well, that's not a sound view for these following reasons, you get yelled at and you're told that you're being elitist because you're using reasoning or you're making arguments. All arguments, all positions are regarded as equal. No position is seen as better than another position because it's supported by better reasons, because people don't focus on reasons anymore, because they don't focus on logical arguments anymore. It's really appalling. Again, it's not that people are stupid. It's that a lot of people are not thinking critically. This is one of the things we're going to be doing at the World Vegan Summit on this coming weekend, is helping people to think critically about an important moral idea, the problem of animal exploitation. And we're going to be talking about things like the relationship between animal exploitation and human exploitation. We're going to be talking about why an abolitionist vegan advocate ought to reject all forms of discrimination. We're going to be talking about human rights and animal rights. We're going to be talking about economic justice. We're going to be talking about these things. And so what we need to do, Bob, is to build a movement of people who recognize that, you know, people walking around with lettuce leaves over their private parts handing out veggie dogs on Capitol Hill is not a good idea for lots of different reasons. We need to be able to sort of look at a guy like Yourofsky and say, you know, look, we don't even have to get to the problem of cultured meat. The guy makes totally bigoted statements about groups of people, promotes all sorts of violence in terms of his rhetoric, and that's not something that we should be, you know, he can say what he wants. I'm not saying he should be censored. You know, he should say whatever he wants. I am saying that we as abolitionist vegan advocates ought to reject it. And so we need to think critically. These are important issues. We need to think critically. As Anna has pointed out, this cultured meat thing feeds into the whole idea that it's hard to give up meat, that it, you know, that meat is something we need. And that's very, very harmful. And once again, we have animal people promoting an idea that is very harmful to animals. But you know what? People are making money off of this. As a matter of fact, doesn't Bruce Friedrich have an interest in some organization that's doing?
Oh, he's basically the cultured meat head at the Good Food Institute, which is, you know, a mercy for animals creation that is promoting this stuff.
And so there are others of these quote leaders, end quote, who are involved in this cultured meat thing. It's a business. This is what these people do, is they're business people. You know, they're business people, and they're exploiting the concern that people have, and they're exploiting the fact that a lot of people don't think critically. I want to say once again, I'm not saying that people are stupid. I'm saying that people are not thinking critically. They're able to, but they're not exercising critical thinking.
Well, the groups are also encouraging that dynamic, because people have an emotional reaction when they're coming to understanding of some of these issues.
Absolutely.
When they're presented with upsetting images, with video, with print articles about upsetting things, and people have a natural impulse of repulsion from that, of shock at that, and they want to do something. And the big corporate charities are there to say, don't worry, we'll do it for you. We know that you are unable to do it, to have an impact yourself. We're the experts. We have the connections. We have the entree. Send us your money. We'll do it. Mm-hmm. And so that satisfies, tamps down some of that emotional reaction it's supposed to. Because then
it makes it even worse, you know, because these are people who care, and they're being misled by their heartstrings. They're being dragged into the wrong place by their heartstrings.
Open the wallets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the middle of the night when an HSUS puppy commercial comes on TV, even though they have no shelters. You know?
That's right. And the ASPCA ones telling me that for 76 cents a day, I can save animals every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very misleading. And so they've hoarded all the money that, imagine if we had any of the money that they had to put toward veganism and vegan awareness campaigns. I mean, it's incredible just what Mercy for Animals and HSUS and the Humane League got, you know, to promote cage-free eggs. $2.5 million Wow, we could make, you know, consuming meat, dairy, fish, and eggs a thing of the past with money like that. Give us a few billboards, a little media presence, and we're on our way.
But we've also sacrificed something else, which is the energy and the talent and the skills of so many people who themselves need to be out there doing animal advocacy and taking back this movement from the corporate charities. Because, as I said, they've been discouraged in every way from the idea that they themselves can make a difference. We're supposed to be beholden to the corporate charities to be the mouthpiece for our concern. So we need to take that back. And certainly that's something we're going to be talking about this coming weekend.
It really is.
And definitely, yeah, I agree that, you know, it's a waste of time and energy. And, yeah, they're being diverted. People who could be out there helping people go vegan or helping people enjoy the new en vogue meat, you know, the cultured meat.
What's really interesting is that, so then you get these folks who are working for these very wealthy organizations, some of whom are making really extraordinary salaries, and when you criticize them and say they're promoting animal exploitation or happy exploitation or whatever, you get this, well, but they're out there in the trenches. Oh, really? They're out there in the trenches, are they? They have wonderful jobs. I mean, there are so many people who are making a living off of the backs of the misery and death of non-human animals. It is appalling. And these people talk about happy exploit. They talk about eliminating the abuses. They talk about relationships with companies that are supposedly more humane. I mean, I still find it remarkable that Ingrid Newkirk actually is on the page of Bell and Evans Chicken. Bell and Evans Chicken, and she's promoting Bell and Evans Chicken as setting a new industry standard and showing how good business and treating animals well can go hand in hand. I mean, that is just appalling.
It is amazing. Oh, and by the way, oddly enough, Compassion Over Killing did an undercover investigation of Bell and Evans after Ingrid and HSUS were on that website praising Bell and Evans. And that's kind of a strange juxtaposition, because there it showed how awful it was at Bell and Evans. So,
part of the business is constant obfuscation, constant confusion. So Ingrid will sign, PETA signs the letter in 2005 promoting Whole Foods animal compassion standards, but then PETA will turn around and say that the animal compare the Whole Foods standards are nonsense, or they'll criticize them and they'll claim that they're misrepresenting things to the public. So on one hand they promote this nonsense, on the other hand they attack it, but they're doing it because they're trying to get to different donor pools. So, you know, yes, you'll get Bell and Evans Chicken will be endorsed by Ingrid. Compassion Over Killing will criticize Bell and Evans Chicken. PETA will come back and say something bad about Bell and Evans Chicken. But then they'll turn around and they'll promote them again. I mean,
they see the error of their ways and they're going to make improvements. So Bell and Evans, you know, it was an aberration. We fired the workers. Now everything's good for the chickens again, right, at Bell and Evans.
So, but what they're talking out of all sides of their fundraising mouths. That's what it is all about. Is they're just talking out of all sides of their fundraising mouths, and it's unfortunate. It's just unfortunate.
But. Yeah. That it is, and oddly enough, none of them signed up for vendor tables at the World Vegan at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. We're pretty much at our deadline for vendor tables, and still haven't heard from Nathan Runkle yet.
You're doing something right, then, Bob.
I just went to the Bell and Evans page, and I don't seem to set. Hold on a second. Here's Ingrid Newkirk still on Bell and Evans. Bell and Evans shows that animal welfare and good business can go hand in hand. And by listening to consumers' wishes, Bell and Evans has set a new standard for the chicken supply industry. That is shocking.
listening to consumers' wishes, people who want to consume chickens, who therefore want a dead chicken on their plate. We're listening to those people for the standards.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, that is that, you know, it is shocking to me that she would say something like that. Every time I look at that, I am absolutely
It's always shocking whenever so-called animal rights advocates talk about how good it is for business, and they're always using that too. Whenever they're partnering with these industries, they say it's good for business, and I didn't know that we were supposed to be good for these businesses.
Yes, but Bob, that proves what I said in Animals, Property, and the Law 21 years ago. That is that animal welfare standards are good for business. That's why they do them. They don't do them because they're recognizing that animals have any inherent value. They're making changes that any rational property owner would make. That's what animal welfare is. If you look at it as an abstract matter, it is a set of instructions that a rational property owner, somebody who owned animals and was rational, fully rational, it's how that rational property owner would deal with his or her animal property. That's what animal welfare is. It's efficient exploitation. It's economically efficient exploitation. If people want to spend their life pursuing that, great. I think it's a tremendous waste of time. I think all it does is increase production efficiency. It makes these institutionalized exploiters more profitable. And at the same time, it makes people more comfortable in thinking that they can continue to exploit. That's what you want to do with your life. If you care about animals, that's what you want to do with your life. Do it. A lot of people make a lot of money doing it. I don't deny that at all. There are more people employed in the animal movement than there have been in any social justice movement in the history of humankind. And where's it getting us? Nowhere. That's why we got to change the paradigm. That's what we're doing this weekend. Are you going to get Gary Steiner on the line?
Yeah, we're going to get Gary Steiner on the line. I think, Ben, we have to play a little, we have to have a little musical break so I can turn the fan on for a few minutes and breathe for a few seconds here. And then we'll get Gary Steiner on. We'll talk about some of the people who are supporting our big event, which is hard to believe, but it is this Friday, July 29th, Saturday the 30th, and Sunday the 31st, where we are on the campus of the University of California in Berkeley. And we have the big Vegan Because We Care, the first ever Vegan Because We Care walk. So you say you want a revolution? Well, what better place to be then People's Park? That's where we're going to be, at historic People's Park, at noon on Friday, and then we will walk through the streets of Berkeley onto the campus and over to the Martin Luther King Jr. Student Union, where the speaker presentations are, and Lower Sproul Plaza, where the expo is, and then three of the most amazing, important days ever. I mean, I've been telling people, you know, this is, you know, this is the most important event people perhaps will ever attend. I really think that, just in terms of, well, I mean, if we listen to climate change specialists, that's the only way to save the world. There's that. We really care about animals. You know, we really have to stop the demand for them, don't we? I mean, it's this. You know, so this is the way to address family health, social justice issues. I mean, it really is the most important event you will ever attend. So attend. Go to worldvegansummit.com and register. And we will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. On Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. There's a Facebook page for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. That's why I can't get anything done. I'm checking messages in 14 places and posts in 18 places. So I guess that's our efficient technological world. We will have Professor Gary Steiner coming up. He's a graduate of Berkeley, so he's coming home in a sense. And we will continue in just a moment. I think that was the cue for the music. Oh, the cue for the music is, say, cue for the music. continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. On Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo at worldvegansummit.com. And we appreciate the sponsorship of some wonderful people who will be there. In fact, you'll be able to meet the folks from Stanford Inn by the Sea. That is America's only vegan resort. So, Stanford Inn by the Sea. Happy to sponsor the event. Sid Garza-Hillman will be speaking on Sunday from the Stanford Inn by the Sea. He's in charge of the wellness program there. And maybe when the event is over and Daisy and I need to decompress, maybe we'll head out to the Stanford Inn by the Sea, which is on the beautiful Mendocino Coast. You can go to stanfordinn.com. And your companion animals are welcome, and it's just a very special place to go biking, kayaking. Just looking forward to heading out there myself. And Raven's Restaurant is there, a renowned vegan restaurant. You will want to, you'll want to eat, right? I mean, that's the idea. You'll go somewhere that it's a vegan resort, so eating is a part of it, and great vegan food at the Raven's. And in fact, Jeff and Joan Stanford at the Stanford Inn have put out a book, Dining at the Raven's, over 150 nourishing vegan recipes from the Stanford Inn by the Sea. That's stanfordinn.com. Say hi to Sid when you come out to the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Also, say hi to Eric Weissman, who will be speaking on Saturday. He is the creator of Evolution Dog and Cat Food. Yes, we want everybody to go vegan, dogs and cats too. And Daisy loves Evolution, and the dogs in your family will too. I'm sure everyone loves Evolution. Petfoodshop.com for that. And if it is warm this weekend, you get thirsty, we'll be tasting Health Aid Kombucha, which is really quite delicious, actually. I've become a big fan lately. And it's all organic kombucha in the amber bottles. I have a bottle of ginger lemon here right by my side. This bubbly probiotic tea that is really becoming popular because it's really delicious. So check it out at your natural food store. It's Health Aid Kombucha. And come taste it at the World Vegan Summit and Expo this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on the UC Berkeley campus. And our next guest, Gary Steiner, joining us. Are you an alum or alumnus? I forgot what it is, actually.
I'm an alumnus of Cal Berkeley.
You're an alumnus of Cal Berkeley, so you're coming home. So.
I'm coming home.
Terrific. What you say, Ben?
Sorry, it's a fan on.
Oh. I'm sorry, I'm being yelled at. I left my fan on. Hold on. okay, professional radio. Yeah, okay. So Professor Gary Steiner is professor of philosophy at Bucknell University, author of Descartes. That's right, I read it correctly. Somebody might have said Descartes, but I'm an alumnus of Queen's College, so maybe. Descartes as moral thinker, Christianity, technology, and nihilism, anthropocentrism and its discontents, the moral status of animals in the history of Western philosophy, animals and the moral community, mental life, moral status, and kinship, animals and the limits of postmodernism. Presentation will be Animals in Western Culture and Animals as Persons at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. So it all sounds like such light reading, Professor Steiner, like waiting in the dentist's office in the waiting room. You'll probably get through all those books.
True story, Bob. I was talking with a friend at dinner just tonight, and I said, they all seem pretty straightforward to me. And he says, no, it's pretty dense stuff. So I guess I'm,
just the titles alone, you know, could be like, whoa, I got to look this one up. What's this?
Well, let me tell you what Gary.
I have to tell you something. I have to tell you how I met Steiner.
Yeah, this is you tell the story, Gary.
I met Steiner when the University of Pittsburgh Press sent me his book, Anthropocentrism, and they asked me to take a look at it and say something about it. And I don't put comments on book jackets unless I read the book. Because if I put something on, there's something wrong in there, and then I got to like listen to all these people. Well, first of all, you should do that, but it's very common in academia. People just write things without really paying much attention. So I read the whole book, and I called the editor, and I said, this is a fabulous book. And it's got the worst title of any book I've ever read. It was a terrible. I said, this book is so exciting and animated, and it reads beautifully, and it's a work of art, a fantastic book. And I actually had our library buy multiple copies because I think it is the best reference book, bar none. There's nothing even close in terms of if you want a book that surveys Western thinking about animals, this book it doesn't get better than Steiner's book. And
thanks.
And so, but the title.
Don't interrupt them, Professor Steiner. Don't interrupt
when you get in conflict. But the title. You know, every time I look at the title, I weep, and I just.
So do I, because I have to practice it in the mirror before he comes on the show.
Yeah, I remember Los Angeles last year. Bob was not pretty.
Anthropocentrism.
It's not just that; it's anthropocentrism. And its discontents. And so I hope when someday he'll do another edition, even though all those people are dead, so there's not a whole lot to say anyway about them. But he'll do a second edition and he'll call it something else, like, you know, something else. But it's a great book. And I tell you something, it really is. See, that's the sort of book everybody who cares about animals needs to read, because most people don't know what, you know, this is not an idea that dropped out of the sky last week. This is, you know, the animal ethics and how humans view animals has been a topic that goes back thousands of years. And, you know, what's really sort of interesting is we struggle with it because we, on one level, I believe, maybe it's being simplistic, but I believe that we know what we're doing is wrong. So we're always trying to sort of figure out some way to justify it by talking about epistemology or metaphysics or God forbid, ethics. But I think that the book is really quite a remarkable reference work. Nothing like it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing like it.
I'm going to save my rebuttal on the title for another day.
Okay.
I'll just say this. A lot of people think that Gary and I agree about everything. There are a few things we disagree on. That's all I'm going to say tonight.
Yeah. And one of them is the title of that book. It's exactly. It's a crime.
Okay. So you'll have that argument about the title in the future. But why don't you say a few words then about the book, Professor Steiner, about, you know, maybe just give us some of what one might take away from it that's interesting specifically?
Yeah, it's a book that, of all the books that I've written, I think I kind of nailed the idea and the presentation of it in a way. I'm not sure, I may never do it again, I don't know. It just came out just right, and I think it's because of something Gary was talking about, which is, you know, people today tend to think that we just kind of make these judgments about ourselves and about animals and about moral hierarchies and so forth as if we're just kind of making it up as we go. And what we don't tend to realize is there's thousands of years of sort of sedimented history kind of in our DNA that in virtue of which we think about ourselves as superior to animals, or animals are things that you eat, or animals are things that you use, or, you know, things like that.
Just that animals are things like that.
Or just that animals are things whatsoever, which is I'm glad you bring it up, because Gary and I are writing a book about animal personhood, and that's exactly the focal point, is, you know, what makes people think that animals are just things.
Yeah, whenever I hear somebody call an animal it, you know what I mean? Like, it. What do you mean, it?
You know? Yeah, well, absolutely, absolutely. And you've already made a lot of assumptions about what an animal is and is not. And I found it, for my own thinking, very illuminating to go back to pretty much the very beginning, back to 7th or 8th century pre-Socratic Greece, Homeric Greece. And look at what people like Homer and Hesiod way back then had to say about animals and human beings, and how this sort of story kind of evolved and got developed over time. And the high point of it is Aristotle, in a way, because he sets up all the modern prejudices about animals in a slightly different way than we would think about them. But he's the first one to really just come right out and say, look, unless you have language and rational capacity, you're not a being that has full moral worth. And it's kind of an either-or for Aristotle, like it is for pretty much everybody else in the history of Western philosophy. Aristotle didn't use this language. Kant comes up with it much later. But either you're a person or you're a thing. And if you've got rational capacity and language, then you're a person. You have full moral agency, legal agency. You have autonomy. You can sort of take care of yourself and figure out what's good and ill for you. And everybody has to respect your rights and so forth. And if you don't have all that full-blown cognitive apparatus, you're just a thing. And things are like clods of dirt or potatoes or fertile fields or things like that. And that's the way thinkers from Aristotle to Kant and beyond have ultimately viewed animals. And so this was just my own kind of working through of the whole history to kind of lay out for myself, how did this whole bizarre way of relating to animals that we live with today, how did that evolve? What's the historical background of it? What are the basic and guiding concepts? And I go from, you know, ancient Greece, and I go to Roman antiquity, and I go into the early medieval world, and I go through medieval Christianity, and I look at Descartes, whom you mentioned before, and I look at modern thinkers, the utilitarians, and people like Kant, and I look at the 19th century and the 20th century. So it goes all the way from Homer to Heidegger and Derrida. And it's a really, really illuminating way to understand all of our culture's values about what it means to be human, and by extension, all of our culture's values about what it means to be an animal. And so that's kind of in a nutshell what that book is about. How can I put this? What I appreciated in Gary's remark is it's very hard to find one book where you see sort of the whole panorama throughout history from ancient Greece to the beginning of the 21st century. You've got people who write about antiquity, you've got people who write about modernity, and I just wanted one book that people could use where you could use it as a reference work. I myself use it as a reference work all the time because I don't have a photographic memory, and a lot of that stuff, you know, I have to go back in there and say, okay, where does Kant say this thing about animals or like potatoes or fertile fields? There's actually a specific place where he says that. So that's what the book is about.
Yeah. People often say to me, like, they say something I said on the radio, and I said, I don't remember saying that. I'll have to listen to the archive to
yeah.
see that.
But, that's like that.
Well, maybe in the page in the book there'd be the answer to the question. You know, sometimes my friends and I sit around and we think, like, who's the first guy that thought an animal was food? You know, like being next to a cow and saying, you know, let's kill her, chop her up, you know, cook her and put ketchup on. And, you know, like, who would think that? To me, an animal, it doesn't look like food. Like, you know, we don't see someone who's appetizing, you know, it's like, how did that happen? You know, it's always like, who's the first one that thought, you know, that animals are food? You know,
it's related to the question, how do people today think of animals as food? And I find it incomprehensible. All I know is that they do. You know what I mean, Bob?
Right. You know, it just seems like such a terrible idea that, you know, it's like, what are you talking about? Forget that. No, you know, let's eat the potatoes.
If you're going to commit an original sin, you should go big. That's my thinking. And so what better way to do it than to completely desecrate most of sentient life?
Well, you know, what's sort of interesting is how uncomfortable, because, you know, we all encounter this, how uncomfortable many people are with eating animals, because it's very clear that this is something that makes people feel very uncomfortable. Now, my view is you capitalize on that and you push them towards veganism, because, you know, you get them to see that their lack of comfort is rooted in some fundamental moral ideas that they have that they're just not acting on.
And so that's what you do. You once you identify that they're having that moral struggle, and I encounter that in people every single day. My view is another vegan in the making. Whereas these large animal welfare corporations do the exact opposite. They say people care, so what I need to do is nurture in them their ability to pay a little bit more money for products that are supposedly more humanely processed or raised or killed or whatever. I think that to use Steiner's expression on his kinship idea, the idea that, we could have all the intellectual, we can talk about it intellectually all we want, but the reality is the only way this works. I'm sorry, can you not hear me?
Ben?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, I think we're fine. I don't know if it seemed like we dropped off, but... I'm told Professor Steiner, if you could adjust your mic level. I don't know what that means, but Ben, something specifically.
Okay.
You heard that?
I actually did, although I have no idea how to do that.
Good, because you would have heard how I ruined the description, how it would have changed when I tried to translate it to you.
It's automatically adjusting them. Tell your guy it's automatically adjusting
Okay, it's automatically adjusting.
I'll try to keep my voice down. I get excited when I'm around Gary. What can I say?
No, but
Professor Francione, we interrupted. Where were you?
What I was saying is that it's not enough for people to. We can make all of the intellectual arguments, but what's really important is that people have a moral impulse. Is the expression I use? Gary uses the expression this kinship, this idea of kinship that we have fellow feelings for other sentient beings, and I think that we encounter. One encounters people every day who have that moral impulse or that sense of kinship, and instead of developing it into veganism, we encourage people to believe that there's a right way to do the wrong thing, and we promote happy exploitation. And I think, this is insidious. And that's, we were talking about this before Gary came on. We were talking about the Animal Rights Conference where, people are upset. They're horrified about what's going on with animals. They want it to stop. They want to do something. And then they've got all of these big corporations that are saying, well, what you should do is you should be eating cultured meat, or you should be eating cage-free eggs or crate-free pork. And these are the ways, or you'll be a reducitarian or whatever. And it's really insidious, but I think it's changing in that the number of people who react well to the sorts of things that Gary and I and Anna and others talk about is clearly growing. And I think the excitement about the upcoming World Vegan Summit is proof of that. I mean, people are coming to this event. It's not an animal rights conference in the way that these other conferences are, i.e. has nothing to do with animal rights, and it's mainly an entertainment event. I think if the summit is going to be more so than last year, and I thought last year's was great, but the summit is a really sort of intense experience where people come and learn a lot. It's not an entertainment event. I hope that people enjoy it, but it's certainly not an entertainment event. People are being challenged.
There are moments we can,
I mean, there's entertainment in the evening and stuff like that. But I mean, whereas the Animal Rights Conference, or that thing called the Animal Rights Conference, is a 3-day entertainment event where everybody's like falling over because they're all patting themselves on the back so hard that, you know, they can't stand up. But the World Vegan Summit is a very, very different experience. And the fact that there are so many people who are interested in it, so many people who are coming, and they're coming from all over the world. I mean, this is not just, you know, people from California or people from the West or people even from America. I mean, I know personally a lot of people who are coming from different parts of the world, including Europe. Exactly. I mean, they're coming from Europe. They're coming from Uruguay. They're coming from South. They're coming from South America.
Have an estimate of numbers.
Do we know numbers?
I mean, like, do you have an approximate idea of what the attendance is liable to be?
Oh, I don't know. We just have many hundreds, and they're just really starting to pour in the last few days. It's just really. You know, as is typical, most people wait till the last minute for something. So I remember I did a vegan event in San Diego years ago. My first event was called San Diego Fall Fest in Dusty Rhodes Park. And it started at 10, you know, went all afternoon. But at 10 o'clock in the morning, we were all panicked and dejected. And there was nobody there at 10 o'clock. But, you know, we turned around in the afternoon, there were 3,000 people there, you know, so it's people, you know, they don't show up like, okay, everybody now, it's 2 months in advance, buy your tickets. They're buying them now, and they're buying
later. Right. Well, you know, I was very pleased, I want to jump on something that Gary said. I was very pleased to be a speaker at the one in Los Angeles last year, and that was very well attended, and my guess is it'll be even much better attended this year.
And what I really like, buzz on. There is a big buzz right now about it.
I'm excited, you know, and one of the things I really like about it is there really is a difference, as Gary was sort of hinting at, between academic conferences and conferences with just people who are concerned. And in some ways, I mean, I tend to think that, you know, a lot of approaches to animal studies have been kind of ruined by academics. And what's really the best and kind of purest way to do this is just to get face-to-face with people who at least have some openness to the ideas. Because what goes on in academia is some whole other kind of animal that Gary has, I think, navigated very effectively for the many years he's been in it. And I've sort of kind of found a way to, but, you know, I'm more and more interested in speaking at non-academic events like the Vegan Summit, and less and less in speaking at academic meetings. Which is what Gary was talking about.
Most academic meetings, people are not vegans, and or at least many of them aren't. And you know, I mean, what I'm interested in doing at this point in my life is spending as much time as I can talking to as many people as I can about veganism as a moral baseline or moral imperative. That to me is essential. And last year we had, I don't know how many hundreds of people we had there, but I was absolutely shocked that an event that was hardcore in the way that event was hardcore in terms of being clear on veganism as a moral imperative attracted that many people. I was very surprised, and I think we're going to have more this year. And it's even, I think there were some people there last year who came because it was an animal event, and once they got there, they said, "Wow, this is really." You're not really taking any prisoners here in terms of rejecting welfareism. And I think some people were somewhat surprised by that because they thought it was going to be more of a standard animal conference. I don't think there will be any people like that there this year because now the World Vegan Summit is clearly identified as what one might want to call a hardcore event. I'd like to call it a common sense event. That if animals matter morally, then you can't eat them, wear them, or otherwise use them. It's that simple. It's really not rocket science.
Don't say it's that simple. I'm trying to get people to come out for 3 days. Don't give them
Well, yes, but they need, you know, there's an awful lot behind behind that. And, you know, we're going to be talking on Friday. You know, Anne and I are going to be doing a thing about veganism as a moral baseline. And we're going to be addressing this whole idea that, you know, veganism is a matter of justice. And, you know, it's a matter of fundamental justice. And this idea that the welfarists, you know, that veganism is simply a way of reducing suffering is tremendously counterproductive and is creating a lot of confusion and is really damaging to the animal movement in the same way things like, you know, promoting cultured meat. I mean, I'm just, on one level, I'm shocked that all of these, quote, animal advocates, end quote, are promoting cultured meat. On the other hand, I guess I should be surprised that I'm surprised, because you know, I guess that's exactly what I would expect people who praise Whole Foods and who promote Bell and Evans chicken and who you know, who hand out coupons for Applegate bacon. I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
Well, you know, they're abdicating their responsibility, though. The world needs to go vegan. So many people are interested in it. I was just at Office Depot, and the person checking us out, you know, saw Daisy's tag, which says "Go Vegan," and she just, you know, engaged me in a conversation for a while. And I think she's coming to the summit. So, you know, it's anybody around you, anybody down the block, could be interested. And it, you know, people are really interested, so let's talk to them about it.
Well, you know, Gary said something interesting before. He said people know deep down that eating meat, that there's something wrong with it. And my own view about this is I think there's truth to that, but I also think that people are deeply, deeply ambivalent, and that there is a part of people, of many people, for whatever reason, they want to eat meat, and they want to find ways to rationalize it. And so one form of that defensive side of people that you get with the vegan message is, you know, it's so extreme, it's so perfectionist, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and so forth. And you know, any kind of extreme measures are just in principle fundamentally wrong-headed. And I always think, and I think Gary has probably said as much himself, it's a little bit like saying, you know, just, you know, beat your slave, your enslaved people less, or, you know, have sex with children less. But to say that you shouldn't ever beat slaves, or that you shouldn't have slaves, or that you shouldn't have sex with children whatsoever, that's kind of extreme. And when you put it in those human terms, then people say, well, that's very different. And then you say, well, what's so different about it? And you say, well, because we're talking about humans as opposed to animals. That's the aha moment that I think Gary is trying to, and I also am trying to awaken people to, which is, if animals matter morally, there's no way of hierarchizing or discriminating between, you know, superior and inferior among human and non-human animals. It's just something that people...
Extreme is killing somebody and eating a cadaver. You know, those,
yeah, I would say,
as extreme to me.
That counts as extreme to me. I vote for that.
Extreme is teaching your children that you know, they should love animals, and then teaching them that it's all right to harm animals, that it's all right to harm that which you love. I think that's extreme, and I think it's extremely pathological, frankly.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, Gary, you may remember this. A couple of summers ago, I was asked to, there's a summer program in the small town where Bert Bucknell is located, Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. The local movie theater, the youth authority in town, or the community center in town, takes the young kids to the movies every Tuesday at 1:30. And they get Bucknell professors to give introductions to the films. And the director of the programming for the theater invited me to give an introduction to the film Babe. And I infuriated a whole bunch of parents and the director of the community center, who threatened not to let kids come to any more movies that summer, because in my introduction to the movie, I simply said, this is what you're about to see. You're about to see Babe's mother get taken off to a slaughterhouse. And this is the way the meat that you eat gets produced, and that any animal that you eat had a mother. And people went nuts. And they said, it's none of his business to tell our kids anything like that. That's between parents and their children and so forth.
We'll have no truth here, please.
Exactly, exactly. You know, and it was pretty amazing to me. I mean, I should have, Gary, you don't remember this, but you told me afterward, what did you think was going to happen? I'm sometimes a little naive about these things, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's true. I mean, I was invited many years ago a couple of times to talk to grammar schools, and I took similar positions, and I stopped getting invited to grammar schools, and because, you know, I was saying things like that, and you know, and junior highs and things like that, I was saying, look, you know. If you care, if you're concerned about what you're seeing here, then you have to understand that, you know, you're whatever it was. As a matter of fact, I actually did something similar with respect to Babe some years ago, the teacher was very unhappy about the comments I made. But let me tell you, this past spring, I was invited to a university to comment. It was a panel discussion in which we were commenting on Cowspiracy. Mm-hmm. And so after the film was over, I was asked the three panelists were asked their views, and I said, well, look, you know, I think that this is an interesting film. I said, looking at this from an ecological point of view is similar to, years ago, Bob Torres, who used to, with Jenna Torres, do Vegan Freak. Bob Torres once said that talking about animal exploitation as an ecological matter was like talking about the Holocaust and saying that it was really bad because it left a bad carbon footprint, because, you know, you had to transport all those people and there was a lot of coal being burned, and then there was a lot of air pollution at the death camps. And we would all find that very odd, that we're talking about the ecological effects of the Holocaust. And I said, and I went on to say, the whole premise of the film is that the environmentalists are all in a conspiracy to deny the ecological disaster of animal agriculture. I agree with that. But I think that you could make another version of Cowspiracy, in which you went around and talked to all of the heads of the animal organizations, and you would see them avoiding the veganism as a moral imperative in the same way that we see the environmental people ignoring the environmental ecological costs of animal agriculture. It's the same sort of thing. You could make
They all get rancher donations. All of them are getting meat industry donations.
And I had some people get up and walk out of the presentation. They were just, and these were college kids. I mean, they weren't grammar school. I mean, it wasn't, you know, and I didn't have any parents calling me, at least. But people got really upset about this and said, you know, how can you say these things, you know, blah, 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 and got very, very emotional. And, you know, one person, you know, I mean, we were all upset. Well, several people got very upset. One person made some pretty bewildering accusations about how harmful I was by making these comments, because I was hurting the animal movement. And I said, well, you know, don't you understand that I whatever movement these people are a part of, I'm not part of that. But you know, it's interesting, the reaction.
Every movement has to go vegan anyway. If there's a moral basis to your movement, then you have to be vegan no matter what your movement is. If you're a peace movement, you know, if you're a feminist movement, you have to be vegan, right? You just can't exploit others.
Well,
I don't think, go ahead, Gary.
No, go ahead, Gary.
I was just going to say, you know, people often think in the first instance that veganism is not eating animal products or something like that, but as Gary has argued, and as I believe, you know, veganism is a principle of nonviolence. It's following the peaceful way. And if that's true, then it's, you know, it is the idea that draws together, you know, opposition to all forms of exploitation and violence.
And I think actually Chris Hedges is going to make that point at the World Vegan Summit, because he sent me his taped remarks last night, and I watched them before I sent them on to Bob, And Chris, I was really happy to see what he said, basically, which in a nutshell was that for him, veganism is part of his commitment to nonviolence and his embrace of peace. And that's exactly how I think about it, Gary. I know that's how you think about it and how Bob thinks about it. And that's why, you know,
I'm a peace activist against the Vietnam War, so sure, it seems sure, like I've evolved sure to this. You know, it makes
and
sense.
So and so was I. And you know, and so you know, we finally figured out that if words of peace come out of our mouth, products of violence cannot go in. And I think that you know, it's great to see that sort of recognition. And there are increasing numbers of people who do see it that way. And I think some people have really stayed away from the movement because of the often violent rhetoric, the anti-human dimension, you know, the really sort of problematic expressions of hatred, you know, towards humans as a general matter, and I think that, you know, that a lot of people have looked at what we're doing or what animal people are doing, and they've come away thinking these are angry people who really these are angry folks. And one of the things that I think is really great about what we're doing is we are presenting this as a matter of nonviolence and as a matter of peace. And you know, and I think that in and itself attracts a lot of people who have not been involved with this issue before.
And if people would just stop eating, you know, meat, dairy, fish, eggs, and honey, I wouldn't be angry anymore. And if the animal rights movement supported veganism, I wouldn't be angry anymore. So
well, I mean, I'd still be unhappy. I don't know what I'd say angry. I'd still be unhappy because even if everyone stopped doing that, there would still be you know, there'd still be racial discrimination. There'd still be, you know, there'd still be sexism. There'd still be violence against children. There'd still be all sorts of problems. I mean, it is the case that if we all became vegan for reasons of nonviolence, the likelihood that we would continue violence towards each other would be very small. But you know, I think, you know, one of the points that I'm going to be talking about at the summit is the relationship between human rights and animal rights. And I'm not going to suggest that animal advocates stop advocating on behalf of animals and start advocating and spending their time on human rights issues. In the same way that I'm not telling people who are doing human rights that they ought to stop and become active in the abolitionist movement. What I say to people who are working on women's issues or children's issues or other human rights issues is, hey, look, you know, keep doing it. That's great. I'm glad you're doing it. But you've got to eat three times a day. You got to buy a pair of shoes. You have to buy other clothing. You have to buy personal care products. When you do those things, when you eat, when you buy clothing, when you buy personal care products, just consume nonviolence. You know, just don't, you know, make a statement that you don't want to participate in the exploitation and victimization of the vulnerable. And similarly, I'm not saying the animal people, they have to stop everything and become, you know, advocates for vulnerable groups of people. What I am saying, though, is that we all need to be promoting equality in human rights in our discourse, and we ought not, as animal people, to be promoting sexism, which we do. We ought not to be promoting all forms of discrimination, which we, you know, I mean, it is, some of these campaigns are shocking to me. I mean, for example, some of these live export campaigns are just vilely xenophobic and ethnocentric. You know, it's this idea that, I mean, it's horrible to transport. I mean, I find, you know, like, for example, in Australia, they've got this live export campaign. Now, I think it's terrible to transport those animals from Australia to other countries on long trips and then kill them. I think it's horrible. But I also think it's horrible to transport, you know, Australia's a big country, and, you know, they ship them all over Australia, and then there's this idea that, well, as long as they're slaughtered in you know, kindly Australian slaughterhouses and they're not shipped over so that they're killed by Muslims, you know, then it's all fine. And I think we have got to reject that sort of thing. And we've got to be clear. We've got to stop these campaigns against the Yulin Dog Meat Festival. Is what's going on in Yulin horrible? Of course it is. But you know what's going on in Yulin is no different from what's going on at your local chicken slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I just want to mention, Professor Francione just mentioned, Chris Hedges does have a special message recorded exclusively for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. So if you want to see it, register, go to worldvegansummit.com. And I want to thank Vegetarian House Vegan Restaurant for its support of this radio program and the event. Vegetarian House at 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose, one of the best vegan restaurants in the world. If you are coming out for the event and find yourself in the South Bay near San Jose, you owe it to yourself to stop by, check it out, check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. It's an amazing international cuisine. It's organic, non-GMO. Everything's vegan there. Wonderful people. And if you're in the Bay Area, you have an event coming up, Vegetarian House caters, whether it's a business event, a social event, you're getting married, you want the food to be great, you can be sure it will be if it comes from Vegetarian House. And I call the food it, not him or her, because it's all vegan.
Well, wait a minute. Don't plants scream when you kill them?
Okay, so you'll have her for a salad then, I guess. Right?
Oh, I got an idea from
him and her for a salad. So, I'm just wondering, Professor Steiner, Gary Steiner, when did you attend Berkeley? When were you a student?
I had a career change. I studied economics at UCLA, went to law school for a year and a half, and then I decided to go into philosophy, and I was there on a second bachelor's degree from the beginning of 79 to the middle of 81.
Mm-hmm. So what did you feel about what was going on then? What were things like in Berkeley? When I think back at Queens College in my time, we were protesting the Vietnam War, and I don't know, drinking a lot at fraternities apparently. But
it was in an odd period of transition at that time. Sort of, I think the heyday of student protest was clearly past, and what was starting to happen was by the time I graduated in 81, it seemed like all the hippies were townies and all the straightnecks were students. And so the whole tenor of the campus had really changed, except for the drum circle on Lower Sproul Plaza. It's always been a really, really fine, internationally recognized university, and I think that's always been true. But it didn't seem like it had quite the same political focus or the political activism focus at that time as that it had maybe 10 to 20 years earlier. That was my own personal perception. There was still political action, but it wasn't quite the same, it didn't have the same presence on campus by that time.
What did you say was happening at Lower Sproul Plaza? What was happening?
Drum circles.
Drum circle.
Oh, drum circles. Okay, yeah. So, well, that's where our expo will be. I don't know if the campus is ready for Woodstock this coming weekend, but here it comes. We're gathering at People's Park. Is this because I was a protester in the Vietnam era? But here we go. We're gathering at People's Park at noon on Friday, a historic People's Park, walking onto campus.
And that was a brilliant idea, Bob.
We say we want a revolution. Maybe it could be rekindled in Berkeley because it's
I didn't hear what Gary said. What did Gary say?
Well, I said I think it's a brilliant idea to start the walk from People's Park because it's been this political football in Berkeley for so many decades. The university tried to make a parking lot out of it, and there was a huge sit-in. This is probably 35 years ago, and it's just always been kind of associated with the idea of counterculture and political protest. And so it's kind of a nice, it makes sense to start from People's Park and walk over to campus.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that. We have just a few minutes left, and did we want to touch upon or hint upon the subject of animals as persons? I know that both Gary and Gary are very much into that, and so just a little bit about that, or have we discussed that all this show? Which is it?
Well, since we have, I mean, I would just say a little bit and let Gary kind of elaborate. I mean, the idea of the book, first of all, is to try to appeal not just to an academic audience, but really to a popular audience, people, non-academics who are really interested in this. And the idea of an animal as a person is, to many people, counterintuitive, because for so long people have thought of persons as human beings. But in the law and in morality, personhood has a kind of a deeper meaning, and it means being a bearer of rights, being recognized to have autonomy, your own capacity to determine your own fate and your own future. And animals being classified as things for so long have been denied animal personhood, no standing to sue on their own behalf, can't assert, don't know the rights that can be asserted even on their behalf. And so the whole idea, and Gary's book of essays from about 7 years ago is entitled Animals as Persons. Abolitionism is the idea that we abolish use of animals, we abolish the property status of animals, abolish the thinghood status of animals, recognize them to be persons, which means that they are fully empowered moral beings with as much worth as any other moral being, and that no longer would we be entitled to eat them, use them, experiment on them, use them as captive entertainment, anything like that. And so the argument is to, or the whole approach of the book is to try to explain what it means for animals to be persons, why it's a relatively straightforward conceptual notion, as Gary sketched out about 20 minutes ago, and what the implications of all of that are.
The dichotomy that Gary referred to before when he was talking about Kant, you know, where Kant says that you got person, you know, it's a binary world. You got persons or you got things. That, you know, you're either a person or a thing. And we've already, in an interesting way, we've already rejected the idea in certain ways that animals are things. The problem is that we don't think clearly about this issue. And we continue to treat animals as though they were things, although I think most of us don't believe that they are things. And he also touched on the main reason for this is we've had this idea for the past several hundred years that the person that animals can be persons, and we can treat them as having morally significant interests, but we could still use them because killing them did not per se harm them because they're not rational, they're not self-aware, and so therefore depriving them of their lives is not per se to harm them. And I think that's a mistake that was made several hundred years ago when the animal welfare movement was born. I mean, in the animal welfare movement in many ways was, not in many ways, it was clearly a recognition that animals were not things, that animals had morally significant interests. The problem is because we have continued with this idea that animals are not rational, and this goes back to Aristotle and some of the other thinkers that Gary mentioned before and discusses in his book, Anthropocentrism. But that this idea that animals may have some moral value, but they don't have full moral value because they are not rational, they're not self-aware, etc. This has really confused things. And I think that if we were to recognize that animals do have an interest in continuing to live, and that it's not just a question of giving them a reasonably pleasant life and a relatively painless death, but that killing them per se deprives them of something, that would lead us in a very, very different direction. And so this idea is to, the idea of the book is to say, look, in many ways we've already crossed the threshold of recognizing that animals are not things. The problem is we haven't thought very clearly about what that means. And when we do think clearly about it, it points in one very clear direction: veganism.
All right. Well, everything points in the direction of veganism, which means everything points at the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming up this weekend. Hard to believe it's this weekend, this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Go to worldvegansummit.com. You can check out the schedule, check out details, the speakers, the events. It's an amazing 3 days, and I think people are really going to enjoy it and really be happy that they came. They won't be the discontents. They will be the people who come and really experience a lot of interesting thinking, a lot of presentations, a lot of truths that you never hear. So I think we're just about out of time, which means I have to take Daisy for a walk before a conference call where we figure out exactly what we're doing this weekend. Everybody's waiting till the last minute to buy tickets, and now they're doing it, and we've waited till the last minute to, oh, I have to fill out this form. Oh, I need this insurance. Oh, I need, you know.
One thing, I've gotten a number of people writing to me saying, will I and other speakers be available to talk with people? And what I would like to emphasize is last year it was the case that many of us spent a great deal of time, not only, you know, when we weren't, on the stage giving our presentation, we were with people, in groups of people, with individual people, talking with them about these things. And I know that you know that I'm going to be available. I know that Gary's going to be available, and others will. You know, we really do look forward to talking with people and discussing these issues with people. It's not just a question of coming and doing a presentation and leaving. It's a question of, this is a weekend where I want to encourage people to sort of view it as, we're colleagues, we're comrades together, planning for a paradigm shift. And that's something that, you know, that is best done in a collegial manner. And I'm sure that we're going to achieve that this weekend.
Yeah, terrific. I mean, yeah, we're coming together. It's not like we're, you know, like I said before, we're separated by Skype or webinars or, you know, off with our little screen somewhere. It's like people interaction. Well, that's quite a concept, actually, you know, coming together and exchanging ideas and taking action for the animals and going vegan. So, okay, so you know the website. It's worldvegansummit.com. I guess we won't do a show next week because we'll be at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Well, hard to believe that it's here, and we really we want to change the world. We want to help everyone go vegan, and so please join us. It's really an important event. So I want to thank Professor Gary Francione and Professor Gary Steiner for being with us today, and we will be hanging out next weekend together.
You invisibilized Anna again, but she left earlier.
Well, I didn't hear her. I thought maybe she was off with the dogs.
Yes, she was. She did go off with the dogs. I don't know if you could hear, but there was a real cacophony there before. So she went off to quiet them. But I will tell her that you asked her forgiveness for invisibilizing her.
Okay. Well, Skype, if it's not a video call, can invisibilize anyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
See you all this weekend. This Friday. All right.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Gary. Bye. See you guys this weekend.
Bye bye.
Okay. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Gary. And thank you for listening.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Ben.
Bye bye. Okay.
Thanks, Ben. And thanks to everyone helping to put this together, Ben and Julie and Michelle and Gracie and Anuj. Who are really, really dedicated. You know, we don't have, you know, we can't be paying everyone because all that money seems to have gone to the big groups there. So, so these are really dedicated people who are doing an excellent job, who really care about the animals and care about you and want to see you this weekend. Oh, parting is such sweet sorrow. I just keep delaying, just saying goodbye. I can't stop because, well, okay, we'll see you this weekend. goveganradio.com and register at worldvegansummit.com.